expected. The docks had always been the target, of course. Hattie cut down Bermondsey Street, a whole tract of which had disappeared in a tumbled wreckage. Burned, eyeless windows stared from shells of buildings, and she passed one tall house, still inhabited by the looks of it, which stood exposed on three sides. Wallpaper and fireplaces patterned its outside walls as it stood in isolation amongst the piles of rubble. She wondered who would have wanted to stay living there, and yet where else would they go? She wasn't the only one facing a life of limited choices. But as she came to the end of Bermondsey Street, shock hit her like a bomb blast. She was about to cut across one of the many small side streets leading into Abbey Street, but she couldn't find one of them. Where was Larnaca Street? Stanwith Street? There was nothing left. Instead, she was forced to cross a moraine of tumbled bricks, stone boulders, and splintered timber. Where rows of terraced houses ought to have been was instead a wide tract of wasteland, littered with rubble, heaped with pyramids of charred beams, punctuated by twisted metal. In one street, only the back wall of a row of houses was left standing, a patchwork mural of water and fire-damaged wallpapers. She pushed on, astonished that in the 20 months since the war's end, so few areas had been cleared. But in those that had, no sign was left of their former occupants or usage. All trace of the life that had gone on in that place had been eradicated. The cleared sites looked somehow more forlorn than the jumble of walls and collapsed roofs. At least they remained a memorial to the life that had been lived before the war. So many once familiar landmarks had vanished. It made her feel queasy and disorientated, as if set adrift on a featureless ocean and washed up on a barren island, where some giant scythe had cut down houses like so many stalks of corn, leaving only an irregular stubble of truncated walls and crushed plaster behind. The air was thick with dust, picked up on the chill breeze which swirled the beginnings of a new snowfall around her feet. Panic seized her, and she had to fight for her breath as a great weight seemed to press on her chest. But she knew the stifling, choking feeling wasn't simply a result of the fields of debris. She was approaching the place where she feared her spirit might be crushed into as many particles as the dust at her feet. The Alaska. During all the war years, she'd feared nothing so much as the prospect of returning here. But now it seemed her only hope. Bermondsey smelled of death to Hattie, and right now it felt like her own. The Alaska Fur Factory, brimful with the pelts of dead animals, was somewhere she'd vowed never to return. She'd experienced another life, another country, and another self. Now she was determined to do more with her life than paint stripes onto beaver lamb furs. She'd be the one wearing the musquash and the mink, and she wouldn't put up with any fake beaver lamb either. She passed some hastily erected 10-year bungalows in the Grange. Prefabs, people were calling them. Uninspiring, barrack-like cubes they might be, but at least they were evidence of life going on. Her feeling of nausea increased as the Alaska's square white tower came into view. The high tower had proved its worth for spotting approaching Heinkels during the war, but she thought it resembled a watchtower in a German prison camp. Once in Grange Road, she stood outside the Alaska's gates, staring up at the sad-eyed seal carved above its entrance arch, along with the date, 1869. The creature's mournful, drooping eyes mirrored her mood, and she lifted her gaze beyond the arch to the hodgepodge of Victorian and modern buildings that made up the factory. The White Tower was one of the newer buildings, only 15 years old, but already looking worn out by the war. Though the factory had largely escaped the bombs, she'd heard one had dropped through several floors of K building without ever exploding. A guilty wish crossed her mind that the German bomb maker had been more efficient. But she dismissed it, horrified at her callousness, for her friend Buster Golding and a few hundred workers had been shot.